The Woach Pod is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with over 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woach Pod. Here with Jonathan Givony, ESPN's NBA draft analyst and the co-author along with Mike Schmitz of our brand new NBA mock draft for the July 29th NBA draft, kind of the post-NCAA tournament version. And you'll see some movement near the top of the draft, especially with a couple of players who really made an impact in the Final Four. But a lot to get to as we start to ramp up now for this NBA draft and what's been obviously a very odd year for scouting and for playing and how all that's going to impact this year's draft. But welcome in to Jonathan. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Woj. How are you?
Great, great. Let's start with your latest mock draft. You still have Cade Cunningham of Oklahoma State at one and Evan Mobley of USC at two. But I think a couple of the names in there who've really, you know, certainly if people hadn't seen a lot of them during the college season, you saw what Jalen Suggs did for Gonzaga in the national semifinals, certainly against UCLA. But Davion Mitchell of the national champion Baylor Bears, who was a guard earlier in the season, I think some people thought of maybe just as a role player, a backup guard, maybe a defensive specialist in the NBA. Jonathan, is Davion Mitchell upped his stock as much as anybody in this entire process so far?
Absolutely, yeah. He was in our late first round probably a month ago, and now he's seventh. So it just shows you, you know, the tournament he had, one, and two, how unsettled this draft is in that 6 through 20 range. I think that, you know, Cade Cunningham has been number one on our board since October of 2019. That was our very first mock draft we put out on ESPN. So almost 2 years now. Evan Mobley was number two in October of 2019. Jalen Green was number three at that point. He's fourth now. So the top five has been more or less settled, especially since Jalen Suggs, you know, started off the college season the way he did. He was absolutely phenomenal in the month of November and December, really. He, you know, put himself in the top five, and then he upped himself even further with a great NCAA tournament. But, you know, Dave, that 6 through 20 range, scouts just don't know. You know, there's a lot to nitpick there with all of those guys, be it Keon Johnson, Jalen Johnson, Franz Wagner, Scotty Barnes, who, you know, we're not even sure if he's going to be in the draft 100% yet, Isaiah Jackson, Corey Kispert. And so that really opened the door for a guy like Davion Mitchell, you know, who's 22 years old, but has as good of a resume as you're going to find. I mean, 45% from the three-point line, you know, National Defensive Player of the Year, had a great year running the team, you know, had that unbelievable Final Four game against Houston with 11 assists and no turnovers, really just showed every facet of his game throughout the year, especially in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, at some point, you know, you want to say, I mean, you know, this guy is ready to go. I mean, it's not like, where are his flaws? I mean, he's a freak athlete. He's one of the quickest guys in the draft, and he's got an NBA body. You know, he's not maybe as tall or as long as you want, but I mean, he guards everybody. So NBA teams want a guy that's going to come in and be ready to play. And that's Davion Mitchell. And so I think he's going to be a controversial guy because people are going to look at his free throw shooting. They're going to say, wait, he shot 65% from the free throw line. How good of a shooter is he actually? And they're going to look at his previous years. You know, I mean, he averaged 10 points a game last year at Baylor, and, you know, he shot 32% for three. And these are all valid concerns. And so it's going to be a very interesting draft process because how did people come to, you know, the evaluations that they did? You know, like you said, people weren't out on the road. I would say probably 75% in the NBA did not send their high-level decision makers out for most of the season up until the conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament. So I think there's people that have a lot of work to do still in terms of going back through the draft and figuring out, you know, what their boards look like. They're going to want to get players into their facilities. They're going to want to study them in person if they can do workouts. You know, what is the combine going to look like? So it's going to be a really interesting draft, and we're really looking forward to covering it.
Jonathan, how wide open is number one and two? I mean, no matter who is at one and two in your mind, does it go Cunningham or Mobley, or do you think even Suggs will be in that discussion at number one based on the draft order?
I think there's going to be a conversation. It's not LeBron James's draft. It's not Anthony Davis's draft where every single person knows before the lottery balls, you know, go up that this is how it's going to happen. I think it's Cade Cunningham. Like I said, he's been on the top of my board since October of 2019. I feel strongly about that. I would take Cade Cunningham regardless of what my roster looked like. But there's going to be a conversation, and there should be a conversation. You know, I mean, this is how mistakes happen, is if we all just assume everything is supposed to go one way, and then it just all goes according to plan. So, and I think that says more about Evan Mobley and Jalen Suggs and Jalen Green than it does about Cade Cunningham. But listen, there are some things that you can nitpick about Cade Cunningham too, you know? So it's going to be a fluid conversation, but I would expect Cade Cunningham to be the number one pick in the draft if the draft were held tonight.
Jonathan, you and Mike Schmitz have had pretty consistently here in your pre-mocks leading up to the draft, Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga back-to-back. You've got them at 4 and 5 right now. Both were with that G League Ignite team. Both skipped college basketball, went down in the bubble, and had a, you know, were scouted very differently. And the feedback I got from GMs who went down and executives was that they love scouting those players in that G League environment from watching them play on an NBA court, watching them play against older professional players and with older professional players, and that it was a great environment to project them to the next level. They felt in a lot of cases, especially this year in the pandemic, felt it was they got a better barometer than they did watching guys in college basketball. If Green and Kuminga, you know, stay in that top five range, are drafted, you know, at the very top, do you think that G League model, you know, is going to have some staying power for top players to continue to be that players seeing that it worked for these two is going to give the impetus for more guys to make that jump with some confidence?
Yeah, I think the G League Ignite team is here to stay. I think this whole experience could not have gone any better for the G League Ignite, the way that things went down in the bubble, making the playoffs, being competitive in almost every single game, and players really improving as the season moved on. You know, Isaiah Todd started the year undrafted on our board, and now he's solidly in the second round. You know, Jalen Green and John DeCamiga, they were going to go top seven no matter what. But I think that NBA teams have a lot more confidence now in drafting them just because they saw them against current and former NBA players. I mean, I counted 70 former draft picks scattered around the 17 rosters that are not the G League Ignite in the bubble. And that doesn't include Jarrett Jack, Amir Johnson, guys like that who are on the G League Ignite. And then there were, on top of that, there were another 25 to 30 players on two-way contracts who were on assignments who were undrafted players. So in terms of level of competition, you can't compare that to college basketball. You know, I mean, guys who are even fringe players, the regular G League player is a first team all Big East guy. He's a player of the year in a mid-major conference. And now he's not, you know, 21, 22 years old. He's 25, 26. These are grown men. These guys are fighting for their survival. And, you know, while some G League games, the transition defense, leave something to be desired. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of defense played in some G League games. The Ignite guys got everybody's best shot on every single night because the opponents realized this is our chance. I mean, all 30 NBA teams are going to be scouting this game. Probably GMs and presidents are going to be – if they're not in the stands or they're not here inside the bubble like a lot of guys were, then they're going to be watching this film. And so for Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga to have done what they did, considering those circumstances, I think it shows you that this program is here to stay. And then you hear the feedback from the players and from the agents of the players talking about how positive their experience were, how much they loved working with Brian Shaw, how he didn't care about wins or, I mean, obviously wins or losses mattered because they won and that helps their draft stock. But everything for him was long term. It's how do we get these guys to get to where they want to be, which is all-stars in the NBA. And so I think that's really compelling, you know, for guys that are in high school right now. What's interesting is that they don't have any commitments right now. A lot of guys are already committed. You know, I know that they're hoping to get Chet Holmgren, the number one prospect in the 2021 class. He's most likely headed to Gonzaga. Jaden Hardy, Michael Foster, those are the two guys you hear associated the most with the G League Ignite. I think they're going to get those guys. But what else? The Ignite had five players committed this year. What's interesting is that they're really exploring the international market. Guys like Usman Jang, who is a potential lottery pick from France, he's heavily on their radar. And so they're really thinking outside the box here and looking. Maybe there's some players that are going to reclassify from the, that are juniors in high school right now. They're going to become seniors, and just like Jonathan Kuminga did. And those guys maybe make the jump to Ignite. Maybe there are going to be some players that decommit, like the way that Deshaun Nix was committed to UCLA, decommitted, went to the G League Ignite. Isaiah Todd committed to Michigan, decommitted, went to the G League Ignite. So they're looking at a lot of things. Ty Washington, a kid from Arizona that I just watched at a high school tournament, the Geico Nationals this past weekend. Rod Strickland was there front and center in part because of Ty Washington. He's ranked number 34 in the class, which is a little bit outside what you would normally think the G League Ignite would look at. But in actuality, he's a top 10 recruit. He started the year outside the top 100, and the scouting services are not going to move a kid like that from 102 to number 8. So he's a legitimate one and done prospect. He's a real top 20 pick, and he's very strongly in the mix for the G League Ignite. So I think that this is definitely here to stay, but there's a lot of question marks that are being asked at the same time by, parents, advisors, coaches, agents that are involved in this process are saying, we know what last year looked like. You guys had a bubble. It was a great setup. There were 16 games. We were part of the actual G League team, and we played a G League schedule. Next year is not going to be that way. They're going to play, the original plan was, as you remember, was for them to play exhibition games against G League teams and then maybe do some barnstorming tours, head to the Philippines, to Australia, to Europe, play different national teams. And so these are the questions that, parents are asking. Who am I going to play with? What is my role going to be? And who are we going to play against? And unfortunately for Rod Strickland and Sharif Abdul-Rahim, they can give an estimate, but they don't know exactly. And that's what these guys want to know before they fully make the plunge into playing for a G League Ignite next year.
Jonathan, you mentioned Deshaun Nix, who originally was signed with UCLA. They were pretty blindsided in the spring when he told them he was going to instead go to the Ignite team, go to the G League. And the irony was during the season or even the beginning of the tournament, people said, well, if Nix had gone to UCLA, they'd probably be a Final Four team, but they're not because he didn't go there. And as it turns out, obviously, they almost got to the national title game. But Mick Cronin, their coach, was critical of how the G League handled the recruitment of him. prying him away from that UCLA commitment. What's been your sense of how those college coaches in general feel when they're targeting their players, and just maybe more how aggressive the G League is in recruiting them and maybe pulling them toward, you know, that in some cases at the high end, it was $500,000 based on a bunch of factors that they would pay you for the year. Some players were significantly less than that, just based on your star power. What's your sense of how the G League has handled this, how they're still doing it? You talk about Rod Strickland, who's part of the program with Sharif Abdul-Rahim, you know, being front and center with certainly top players this year, just like he was last year, in evaluating them, being at their events, and obviously talking with them and their families about not going to college, to play college basketball anyway. There is a college component to this, but going right to the G League.
They're not apologizing, and they're not going to change their strategy, and I don't think they should. I mean, players have the right to have options, and if this is an option that's available to them, I think it's fair game, you know, to present something. And, you know, just like there's all kinds of places that these guys can play. And, you know, if Mick Cronin, if North Carolina called a week ago and said, hey, we want to offer you the head coaching job, he would have been the first guy on the plane to sign and head to Chapel Hill. So I think the reason why they reacted the way they did was UCLA has a kid named Peyton Watson, who's a top 10 recruit, potential top five pick from Los Angeles. He's being recruited by the G League too. And so I don't think he's going to go, is my understanding, but this is not going to end anytime soon. And, you know, I mean, I think that just this is just the reality that college coaches are going to have to live with. And, you know, in addition to the transfer portal and NIL and, you know, all of these different things that are just changing the complexion of college basketball completely.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
This pre-draft process, Jonathan, because every college player, even seniors, has the ability, this was a free year. You weren't burning a year of eligibility. So every player actually has to declare for the draft, even seniors, because you have the option of coming back. What has that done to the pre-draft process? And even guys down on the lower end who in the past would say, hey, I want to test the waters and I'll go get a couple workouts with teams, but then I'll go back to my school for the year. Is it just a flooded, is the process just flooded with prospects for teams to evaluate? There's only so many guys they can work out. There's only so many guys who can be invited to the combine. Has it, and teams are trying to figure out who's staying in the draft, who's going back to school still. Has it created a level of chaos even with heading into the July draft?
I don't think so, because, you know, the top seniors in college basketball, you know, the Corey Kisperts and Chris Duarte and Austin Reaves and Luca Garza, Herb Jones. You know, those guys, they're not going back to school. You know, they're going to be in the draft. And the underclassmen, you know, guys testing the waters, you know, checking out the pre-draft process, trying to get an evaluation, trying to get feedback. That happens every year. So I don't see that. I think if anything, the draft being pushed back a month helps in that regard, because it gives NBA teams more time to figure out, you know, what the pool is, who's serious about staying or going. And, you know, for the most part, I think NBA teams, they know who the top 25, 30, 40 prospects are, and they're going to evaluate them very heavily. They've already done a lot of their work already. And for the most part, those guys don't go back to school. There's always exceptions, you know, Joakim Noah, Al Horford, Marcus Smart, you know, guys go back. But, you know, it could be Scotty Barnes this year. So we'll see. But for the most part, I think we know what that group is going to look like.
Jonathan, what's the impact of just a year plus of stunted growth at different levels for young players, not being part of teams, not being able to be in the gym or the weight room, not being able to be around teammates or coaches, maybe playing limited games, again, limited practice time. Are you curious to see what the residual effect of that is 2-3 years from now, about how this year in the pandemic impacted basketball at all levels, but at the highest level? Like, what kind of stuff are you hearing about what teams or coaches are anticipating, and in what areas this group could feel, look, be a little different?
First of all, I think you saw a lot of highly touted, you know, potential one and done candidates started the year, you know, in our top 20, and really took a slide as the year moved on. And I'm talking about DJ Boston from Kentucky, Zaire Williams from Stanford, you know, Josh Christopher at Arizona State. You know, I think that not having the preseason, not having exhibition games, not having as many non-conference games, just not, you know, most of the time these guys get to a college campus in June, and they have 5 months to work in the weight room and be in open gyms and practice, you know, with these really, really highly qualified coaches every day. And a lot of those guys missed that opportunity. And I think it really hurt a lot of players. And I think that's why this is going to be a little bit of an older draft than last year's group. Now, I think what will be interesting to study in a couple of years from now is the amount of rest that players got, you know, like not playing 6 AAU games in a weekend, you know, I mean, 8 AAU games in a weekend, all that wear and tear that, you know, we don't exactly know what that does to a young player's body, but a lot of guys avoided that, you know, and instead they were in the gym working individually with trainers, getting shots up, working on their ball handling. And so, you know, maybe fine-tuning their game in a way that they otherwise would not have if they were spending the entire spring and summer out on the road playing, you know, these high-level AAU games. I'm actually a proponent of AAU. I think that it's one of the best things that's happened to American basketball is the fact that we take all the best players from every city and we put them on a team, and then we put all those teams together in one gym and we just let them duke it out for a weekend and say, who are the best guys? And because in the past, you know, 25, 30 years ago, guys would get a false impression of where they were at skill-wise because they didn't get a chance to test themselves against the best players in America. A lot of these guys, you know, they think they're the greatest thing ever, and then they go to an AAU tournament and they see right away, my stuff doesn't work. You know, like if I can't shoot off the dribble when a guy goes underneath a ball screen, I'm dead in the water. You know, I'm not going to playing against 5'10" guys the entire season in high school, you know, without a single Division I player on the court, that's not a great way for me to improve. And so that's why we're seeing so much movement now, players going to, you know, these really high level prep schools. These are really basketball factories where, again, they get to test themselves on a nightly basis. And, you know, iron sharpens iron. And so, you know, a lot of that was lost, unfortunately, to the pandemic. And so I think exposure wise, that's going to hurt kids. And I think in 3 or 4 years from now, we're going to look up and we're going to say, there are 3 or 4 guys that are in Division II or Division III or NAIA that are potentially first round picks, you know, and guys mm-hmm. that nobody heard about because they didn't get a chance to go to that AAU tournament. And there's so many stories of guys who nobody heard about them, you know, and then they go into a gym and they walk out and they have 25 high major offers the next day. Without having that opportunity, there's going to be a trickle-down effect because, as you know, Woj, all these college coaches, they're not interested in four-year players anymore. They're interested in transfers. They want to get old as much as possible. And so a lot of very good high school players are going to end up at a much lower level than we thought. Some of them will end up transferring up, and so it'll figure itself out. But we're going to be looking at a very different landscape in the evaluation market 3 to 4 years from now. I'm pretty sure about it.
Yeah, you know, and to think, listen, a couple of years ago, there was a thought by 2021 or 2022 that one and done would be gone and high school players would be back in the draft. That has not happened, and it more and more looks like they are punting this issue to the next collective bargaining agreement a couple of years down the road. The union and the league, just we've been over this. They both agree that they would like to have one and done gone, but they can't agree on the rules in place once it happens in terms of physicals and combine, a lot of ancillary issues. But it would be coming out of the pandemic and the lack of access to players and that teams and organizations would have had places to see them. It would have made it even a more wide open draft. I think if we had that younger class coming in, but you know, we go back to that Ignite team and you talk to executives who were down there and, you know, GMs who were going to be drafting in that range. I mean, Sam Presti spent probably a couple weeks down in the bubble, at least more than a week, and really got to see Kuminga and Green up close. And, you know, he's got his own G League team there so he can interact. You know, it was an ability to really evaluate a guy in a way you're not doing even if you go to Kentucky or Carolina or Duke to watch a player. And so, yeah, this is going to be an interesting few months. We've got, again, the combine in June. We think it's going to be in Chicago again. We're still waiting to hear how exactly it's going to look, how it's going to feel compared to past combines. And then obviously the draft right after the NBA Finals in July, with free agency coming on the tail end of that. And then, you know, ideally by next season, next year, that you would be back to a more traditional schedule of, you know, draft at the end of June, free agency July 1. One more year, it seems, of the calendar being off.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Woj, what are you hearing in terms of, you know, the conversation around one and done being eliminated? Do you see the G League Ignite program? Is that the compromise that this ends up being and keeping it one and done for the next few years? Because I don't hear a great appetite from my friends that are in the NBA, you know, GMs and presidents. They don't tell me I'm clamoring to get back to these high school gyms.
They are not. They are not. And I think this was going to be a bridge. You know, the G League Ignite was sort of designed as a bridge between the end of one and done and where we are now. Because if you end the one and done rule, you can come right out. You wouldn't need this. Those guys would just go into the NBA. And although many of them would spend a lot of their year in the G League, this is actually a better this is a much better setup than what will be awaiting them when they're just in a normal G League grind. This thing is not exactly the G League. You're not taking the 6 a.m. flight from Fort Wayne to, they'll go play the Memphis Hustle. Like that's not designed for it to be that way. The agents wouldn't have allowed their players to do that in that circumstance. They have to sort of treat these guys special to recruit them and get them there. But there's no question that, the NBA, what Adam Silver wanted was for, the players to not have to go to Australia or go to Europe, go overseas if they weren't going to college, allow the teams to scout those players here domestically, and then get them in with NBA sanctioned coaching and get them in their system. You mentioned, Brian Shaw and that entire, the setup they have. But I think it's going to be there longer than, maybe we all anticipated, because the one and done, especially with the pandemic, it just went, I mean, over a year ago, that was at the top of the list of the league's issues and discussions. And now it's really an afterthought because of all the financial issues the league is facing and all the issues of just trying to shepherd the league through this time, like everybody else is trying to figure out whatever business they're in. And so, but I do think, we're going to see, like you said, we'll see more players go in the Ignite program. It's not for everybody. There's some guys who'd rather play, in front of 12,000-15,000 people in a college arena, on ESPN and prime time. Like that's appealing to some, but like you said, there's options, and now players have options. They don't, you can go to college basketball if that's what you want, and you can go to this Ignite program. You can start to get endorsement money if that's available to you, shoe money, in addition to what they're going to pay you. And, obviously, yes, listen, our network and other places, they want to put those guys on TV and use the name brand of some of those players and their talent to get people to watch that and to watch the G League in ways that they would have not watched it before.
Yeah, and there's no question that college basketball is a great platform for most guys. And once this NIL rule, name, image, and likeness rule passes, it's already passed in 7 states, and in some states this summer, July 1, it's kicking in. So there's real momentum here for players to be able to get paid. And so I think you're going to see guys like a Zion Williamson or, a Jalen Suggs or a Cade Cunningham. They're going to have really competitive offers, from these colleges, whether it's under the table, how exactly they word it, I don't know. But I mean, everybody knows that, there's going to be money available to these top guys. And so at least now they can do it in a way that's transparent. And so that's just going to give even more options to these players, which I think is great.
Yeah. And I think what will come out of that marketplace is, Jonathan, in a lot of cases, the under the table money doesn't always end up to the player. It ends up to people around him. And in this case, if we're like, pay the guy, pay the player, it's his talent. And instead sometimes, in many cases, it's to others around that player who get that money and who sometimes without the player even knowing they're getting it. And so that's what I look forward to, is the day where the actual player, the talent, the individual who's earned that money and is earning it, it's delivered directly to him.
Yeah, and it's going to make college basketball a better product, because it's going to, $50,000-$60,000 for a senior, who is a star in his market, who plays at a Creighton or an Oregon State or a Boise State, that's going to go a long way, and kids are going to want to stay in school for that. And I think it's going to make college basketball better, and it's going to make the NBA better on top of that. So it's about time, it's way late, but I mean, thank goodness it's coming. I mean, they just got waiting on the Supreme Court, which is weird because it's a totally unrelated thing they're talking about, but it's inevitable at this point, it feels like.
Jonathan, always good to catch up. We'll be talking a lot more between now and the draft in July. But if you haven't seen it yet, check out the new 2021 mock draft on ESPN Plus. You can get it at Draft Express, Jonathan's Twitter account, or obviously over at ESPN.com. Jonathan, we will catch up soon, brother.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to our guest today, ESPN's NBA draft analyst, Jonathan Givony. Be sure to listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to also listen to The Low Post with Zach Lowe and The Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst. We'll catch you next time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms or restrictions apply.